right? It's get that underway. Good morning. So I've read through the evidence. So any particular points you want to sort of draw out for my attention?
they need to stay above land and not to pass over the lake, because in the event of an accident, both the Michael Light team and Eagle Light are meant to be able to, you know, land as quickly as possible on them. They do assure me that they have designed these flight paths to reduce their flying over residential areas as much as possible, in particular Blanket Bay and the township. But obviously waiting this to do that much closer to the airstrip. So I think it's probably more difficult for them to adjust these flight paths over that particular area. I'll just go back to the license process and the notion of cumulative effect. It's our intention to process all of those licenses at the same time, which is why we just allow another period for operators to submit the information. Yeah, definitely are different to be considering them all at the same time rather than individually. And once that process has happened, it's not our intention to accept further applications, and certainly not future applications, if they can't demonstrate that they've got their dream operating system. So it's also been pointed out in the last couple of days that the Charlie Tan lie outside of the designation. That operation is one of the more recent, I understand, that's been there for probably just under 2 years. So at the time the management plan process was started, that operation was only just starting up with no different after that. So I've put that out, that basically the most recent estimate to the issue.
Right, the same with the licenses then. An operator who holds the license wants to alter somehow the way they operate, say increase number of flights and matters of that sort, what you're thinking about how that would be dealt with?
The intent of the plan is that legal abuse will remain the same. If the operator wants to change their use in any way, they would need to demonstrate that the number of flights was increasing. The management plan was deliberately worded to be high level, allowing for that the change in the nature of operations, but definitely recognising that it's primarily is the level of use that we're seeking to keep at the risk of people.
Now, Mr. Hunt's evidence, looking at them around, let's say he acknowledges the lack of data, noise data, but he proposes a cap in terms of and the reason for the cap is to protect the existing environment, and his evidence is to the effect, well, the number that he's chosen is again is a reasonable number having regards to both airport users or aircraft users and the residents. Do you have any comments you can make for me about the process or the idea of picking a cap in the interim period?
So the cap you're referring to is at noise level?
Noise level cap, the LDN 55.
Council definitely open to having a noise control regime in place, but I think we're very reluctant to include a cap, particularly because, you know, the lack of information at the moment. So accepting that a noise management plan may be appropriate, but not willing to have a specified cat with a mat, just because of the requirements and complexities of, I guess, enforcing that. At a time where we're just, you know, still relatively stuck around what these different vortices are.
What's the thinking about how you respond to circumstance where if there were to be, if noise monitoring was to occur around the existing levels of activity and the results of that demonstrated that noise levels were, can I use the phrase, unacceptable, what would you then do?
Depending on how that level was set initially, on the council does have an obligation to ensure that, you know, there isn't an unreasonable level of noise. And I think that would need to be addressed in the licenses if there was clear evidence that there wasn't exceeded of noise that, you know, wasn't acceptable for whatever reason. I think we have to address that.
But to help me with that, is it you're thinking that council is going to get some data or get some noise readings completed so it has a handle on the level of noise output currently, so it's got a level of comfort that when it issues licenses for existing or current operators, it's not, you know, creating a rod for its own back?
Yeah, I think we'd be willing to engage an acoustic expert during the license process. You know, as an overarching assessment to help us make decisions on those licenses.
Because the obvious risk without doing that is if you just issued licenses to current operators, it may be that you're ending up issuing licenses where the level of noise output is greater than what it should be.
Yeah.
What do you think of that's a remote level of, or a very low level of risk?
No, I think to, you know, be the responsible landowner, we do, I think we're doing it there. Sorry, if I can just, today there hasn't been any records taken by the Department of Conservation historically up to this point. So we definitely in this place to try to grapple with what the use is and what information we'll need to make a good decision on the licenses.
Right. Any other comments about sort of, you know, supporting the preference of dealing with licenses and the thing from managing plan of the conditions of the designation?
Certainly the applicants for the license, either way, licenses and how we manage the operators. Mm. As Sam pointed out, it's much easier for us to enforce those and to regularly review the licenses that are added to the designation conditions.
All right, any other points you want to draw out for my attention?
With the decision-making boundary, it's just the page to the airship itself.
Mm-hmm.
We recognise there are some activities that may require a consent for council, such as a new access road if some of the wind box through trigger consent, then council is comfortable with authorising those through new trigger consent. It's anticipated that that is relatively straightforward consent. And we wouldn't, we have no intention to council to do any sort of major complicated work with regards to the interest.
A consenting process for accessway, for airstops, matters of that sort, the existing building that's on site, you know, the Porticon with its, are not consented, or what's the...
That would be the responsibility of the operators.
Yeah. So they currently don't hold resource consent for those?
No, but they are temporary buildings, all of them, so
in your evidence, you make the point that if airports users want to expand activities, then your view is it's appropriate they go through a consenting process, and whether that triggers notification or whatnot, there's a prospect or possibility of the community being involved through that process. That's your strong preference. Okay, anything else on penalty here or not? Okay, so can we move to the event centre? And you've been present while we've been having a conversation about the child care element or facility. Do you have any additional comments for us to make?
No, I agree with the commission around if the area was a very efficient,
I don't recall the appropriate way to deal with it. So, just trying to push that out a little, you do comment on it, and you evidence would agree, but some of Mr. Charles' comments about, well, this is making use of an existing facility, and the physician, he's not overly troubled about it from a noise point of view. And that's you're in common with him on his thinking there.
Yes, and my understanding is that it is only used at the moment while parents are using the facility.
Yes.
And I believe there's any change to expand that and to, you know, a facility where parents could, you know, leave and leave for the entire day.
Well, so if I picked that up wrong, I thought the idea was that it would be expanded, but is the idea that it be just restricted to users of the facility for some other purpose?
That's
currently
the future
plan. Yeah, it's future-proofing, so there's no current intention to use the shelving facility for people that aren't using the other facility. But we didn't want to have a control imposed on the designation that would prevent us from going down that path in the future, because it makes good planning sense with all of the other facilities around them.
Yeah, but so then that it follows, doesn't it, that allows the possibility for the child care centre to expand in terms of it, not the restriction about that currently is in place.
Well, there's no restriction in place.
There's no restriction in place. No restriction in place now. just wanted to just raise with you the issue of the sign on State Highway 6. And you've made a suggestion in your paragraph 8.63. And you've got this concept going of significant changes in the operation of State Highway 6. What did you particularly mean by where events on a site may generate traffic that will significantly change the normal operation of State Highway 6? So you've got some kind of threshold in mind, or?
My understanding is that the live event is set up at the event center, concert for example, maybe the prisoner events that occur. Those types of events would typically trigger traffic management plans, but there's obviously a number of other regular events, even sporting events, rugby, school cross country, that are more minor in scale. So the expectation to consult with the TA on every type of event that happens, having a significant threshold is appropriate.
In terms of the civic officers, you've made comment there in response to the reporting officers concerned with you. Is there anything that you'd like to add?
Not.
Alright, okay. No, that's all been very helpful. I don't have any more questions. Thank you. The right to reply for the requiring authorities.
Yeah.
The way that's supposed to work, I believe.
Well, I thought I was confused after something that you did say that.
Yeah. So I think the procedural minutes that was issued gives timing from the date of adjournment of this hearing, and the airport authority asked for an extension of time. And that's been provided to them by a few days, I think, I believe. Because the mission came up yesterday that they wanted more time to think about. So my intention is at the close, well, at the finish of this presentation, I'll adjourn this, and then that time period will start from that date.
And so what
would
be considered 5 working days for?
I think it's covered in the procedural minute. I think it says 5 working days. But if you just check that.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
So, Mr. Winchester.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Winchester. Spread out. Thank you.
Rebecca Holden's further materials.
I see.
But it looks like it was, is there two?
There are three summaries there.
Oh, there it is. Three. Yep. There's three there, and I haven't read the opening.
Okay. It's all right. That's good to know. Well, it seems certainly one question was from Christians of Council and Witness Week this morning that the live issues are fairly well defined. Well tailored, and certainly that both the legal submissions, the open submissions that were filed yesterday, and the summaries of evidence, the summaries of the 42A reports from Ms. Holden are similarly refined on a number of those issues. So we should really be boring down into the same detail. With that in mind, what I will do then is take you through the opening submissions. I'll leave the synopsis as read.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to answer any questions on the synopsis. Obviously, happy to answer any more general questions that I haven't covered either that may be of interest to you, and then I'll call on Ms. Holden. And I should introduce to my left Ms. Hockley,
yes, good morning,
assisting me on this matter.
Thank you.
Possibly knows more about it than me, but anyway, we can use that. I may refer to their attention.
It's fine.
Thank you. So, in the opening submissions, I've set out the outline and the coverage, and at 2.3, the main points that these submissions address, which is briefly on the NZDAA submission. I'll then deal with the Glenorchy airstrip and the conditions volunteered by the council as requiring authority. Talk briefly about the extension of the boundary of designation for Wallach Airport. Then turn to the proposed broadening of the list of committed activities in relation to designation 2, Queenstown. Proposed amendments to designation 44, which is the approach and land use control at Queenstown Airport again. And finally, I'll refer to the council's withdrawal of its proposed requirements for closed landfills. And as I say, I may not have covered everything that's of interest to you, sir, so I'll have a few questions and assist where I can.
Thank you.
The main purpose of addressing the NZTA's late submission was essentially to advise you, sir, and put on the record what the process will be in line with the decision to accept that late submission. I did just confirm the record that the council accepted that was a pragmatic and available process, and certainly would have avoided some significant administrative difficulties of having to re-notify in stage 2, which was probably the. So the council, as I say, at 3.4, the council put public notice of the submission, the service submission on all parties who made submission on the proposed plan, and all the parties who may be directly affected by the matters contained in the submission, and maybe very few people given the understanding that NZCA, the owner of the or do you think that they will prepare a section 42A report on submission and infer submissions and if necessary hearing will be held. So I suppose that does raise a question in light of your intention to adjourn this hearing. I suppose that the acceptance of a late submission essentially triggers a separate process that possibly may need to be reconvened, and I'm assuming your delegation may not extend to that, that separate process at this stage. I'm just not sure about that, how that would be administered. But I don't think it should preclude you from adjourning this hearing and then proceeding to issue recommendations and decisions.
Mm. Well, that's the way I see it. I've only had a very brief conversation with the chair, Mr. Nugent, and I was alive to the point that the late submission had been agreed to and received, and he just broadly said, well, you know, subject to how all that goes, then maybe this hearing will have to be reconvened in the future, but there's a fair bit of water to go under the bridge to get that point. So subject to anybody telling me why I can't, I just intended to box on and adjourn this hearing and get on with the balance of the matter and leave the NZCA thing to sort of run its course.
And I think it's perfectly sensible and available to you, sir.
Thank you.
Once then moving on to the North Yes Group, obviously we've heard the council requiring our to speak with his education and his role over without modification. And you've obviously had some presentations from the Waiau Reserve Residents Association, and they're seeking the conditions being imposed on the education and as members of the economic influence on the environment. The council has required authority to volunteer, as I understand, the two conditions on the education, restricting the hours of operation and requiring aircraft operations to stay in the region and operate their aircraft in accordance with the fly and neighbourly guidelines. The evidence of Mr. Peter Holden, who is the 42A report author of the designation chapter, is that the conditions volunteered by the council are appropriate to manage the adverse effects of aircraft movements on the environment. And you've heard from Ms. Galdacci this morning in terms of the volunteer conditions. We've heard from Dr. Charles this morning in terms of the reserves management plan, and has relatively firm view that includes appropriate noise control measures for North Yes Group, and considers there's no technical reason to impose the conditions volunteered by the council on the designation. It is an interesting and finely balanced issue, and just apart from my submission to this point, in that while the Reserves Act generally provides for reserve management plans to be prepared for every reserve, it's usually the exception rather than the rule. And certainly, based on what I've heard this morning, it is quite rare that reserves management plans contain the level of detail that this one appears to, and it may be necessary given the nature of activities in order to provide for some guidance in terms of the council's licensing. So, as I say, there's a finding balance issue as to whether complete reliance can be placed on that reserves management plan. From a broader RMA and regulatory perspective, however, and given the concerns expressed by the Waiau Reserve Residents Association, from the council's perspective as an administrator, it considers that it may be more appropriate to have conditions included as a designation because it is a slightly more accessible and better understood mechanism than a reserve management plan, and that it is. In the district plan, there are statutory mechanisms for dealing with issues of compliance. There are outline plans, there are formal processes. Whereas in terms of the Reserves Act, the method of enforcing reserve management plans is not particularly clear in the legislation. again, what was not suggested, that the need to enforce the reserve standard plan is going to arise. Presumably, the mechanism would be to approach the district court, check some form of declaration or something along those lines. So in terms of administration, I understand the point made by the authority about ease of administration under the reserve management plan, that this is a resource management process, and it may be that the balance sits in favour of more explicit conditions on delegation in order for that transparency and public confidence issue to be addressed. So, from the administration point of view, I suspect from Ms. Holder that she doesn't consider that the conditions policy by the council will result in unnecessary duplication, but rather a reasonably necessary and circumstances that should be imposed.
Is it so? I've got it clear in my mind. The conditions that we're there talking about are the conditions in relation to the timing and utilisation of the import and the neighbourly rule, if you like.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're not there talking about a noise condition in terms of total noise outputs or things of that sort of age.
No, but you will hear from Ms. Holden in terms of the noise issue, and bearing in mind the evidence from Mr. Hunt and Dr. Charles as to the ability, based on current information, to see the limit. I don't actually recommend that, but I suspect she will recommend a condition requiring preparation of a noise management plan as a condition on the investigation, which may require further information to be gathered in order and for that plan to be incorporated into the designation. So that would go further than the condition that the volunteer by requiring writing.
Okay.
Turning to the point of record designation extension, and really that's all I've dealt with in these submissions, but I can answer some further questions if you haven't. The council is requiring priority diagnosis and modified designation by extending the boundary to include additional 1.27 hectares of land, and seems to be clear that the council does not own this additional land. The evidence of Mr. Kyle on behalf of the council as requiring authority is that the panel is not required to consider whether adequate consideration has been given to alternatives under section 168A3. This particular of the landowner was contacted prior to submissions on the proposed plan closing and made no submission. And I suppose my point in addressing this is just as to which legal test is applied when considering this issue. And I say that while the fact the landowner has not submitted is relevant to the panel's consideration of effect, it's submitted that it does not necessarily relieve the requiring authority of the need to give adequate consideration to alternatives in terms of section 168A3 of self-consultation with the landowner, and the absence of the submission does not overcome the requirements. Given, however, the absence of a submission from the relevant landowner and or occupier, this may mean that the requiring authority can rely on the second limit of the test, which is the absence of significant adverse effects. And as I say, in any event, the weight given to relevant matters is at your discretion, sir, and the relevant matters that must be considered under section 168.3 are not tests for the events, but simply mandatory relevant considerations. So even if you form the conclusion that adequate considerations in terms of everything been given, that wouldn't necessarily be fatal.
That's helpful. Well, before we move on to Queenstown and Port Pen, you probably heard some of the conversation and questions I had of Mr. Clark,
yes,
in relation to the balance issue for Wanaka Airport. So I guess the thrust of my queries of him were the effects about the matter raised by Ms. Holden, whether adequate consideration had been given to the effects of the proposed modification relating to that, the retail and restaurants and those modifications. So talking it through with you, he responds by saying, well, look, the extent of the modifications, there was a limit there, there was a control, because they have to be ancillary, and that's fine so far as it goes. And he made the point that, well, the airport is remote from Wanaka Township, matters of that sort. And he drew my attention to the point that there are, other facilities where persons most likely would go to, complete the ordinary coffee trips, purchase trips and matters of that sort. So he didn't really sort of see much of an effect issue arising. So the thing that's exercising my brain at the moment is just the adequacy of his approach to assessing the effects, and wondered if he had any comment on that for me.
Well, I suppose what I would say is that the RMA and the procedural process is dynamic, and all the information which comes before you is relevant. Obviously, there's a potential scope issue in terms of the original notice of requirement that's adequately identified the potential nature and scope of effects. I can't comment with any detail on that. I haven't looked at it in any detail. Certainly, I accept Mr. Kyle's logic was quite compelling, and it was given, I suppose, based on his quite considerable experience dealing with airport matters and understanding the dynamics of airports. It was specific to the circumstances of Wanaka, although we did. It was interesting to hear his views as to the future role of Wanaka Airport. And it is possible that some of those changes that he identified might come manifest in the life of this designation, in the life of this plan. Mm-hmm. And so what is included in the plan and the potential effects it might provide or should be able to be contemplated. Obviously, the outline plan process will deal with that. As to whether there's certainty about the nature and extent of activity that might establish under the designation, well, that's a question of how the words are interpreted. I've talked that through with Ms. Holden, and outline plans would need to be submitted, which needs to demonstrate on a reasonable basis that an activity was connected and accelerated the importance of activities. And there is the ability through that process to maintain oversight. Not sure if I can take it much further than that, sir.
It does. Mr. Young, when we were talking about similar points, Mr. Young appeared for Remarkable Parks on this, and he was making the point he wasn't aware of any environment court legal challenge by an administrator of a plan challenging an outline development plan. And he said he did some research into that space, and I think he mentioned one case that came close. But he was he was making the point that this outline development process that's really kind of, if the designation is drawn quite broadly and quite wide, the council doesn't really have many spheres that can show it. That was the point he was making, and I wonder what your view of that particular approach or comment is.
I pretty much agree with that, and I'm certainly not aware of many cases, certainly not recently, where there was a dispute between the requiring authority and the territorial authority about an outline plan and whether it was in accordance with the design purpose. And those matters are matters between the requiring authority and the TA, rather than involving the public as well. So one must rely on the council to maintain that scrutiny and oversight in terms of designations. Designations are a very powerful instrument in favour of the requiring authority. So to the extent there is uncertainty about the nature and scope of activities, probably desirable that that's clarified or constraints are imposed or there is clear and objective language built into the dedication so that potentially affected parties can have a clear confidence about what's established. I do, in terms of the Queenstown Airport issue, deal with the McElroy case immediately below my submission, but it does sort of cross over to what we've just been discussing about what this means in the modern context and about how, I guess, quickly the nature of the airport has changed in recent years. And I just do have some reservations about a wholesale reliance on McElroy, which I can take you through and explain.
You know, I think the evident tension isn't there between the requiring authority trying to forecast what's going to be occurring for the relevant asset over the life of the plan. It doesn't want to be constrained. And your point about language is fine, but there's kind of two pulls at the issue from either direction. The requirement authority wants it to be sufficient but broad, because it can't see fully into the future what might happen. And then we've got this challenge about clarity of words being specific. So it's kind of a, you've got both ends sort of taking away.
Yes, that's right. And I suppose one factor that is relevant with regard to both Queenstown and Wanaka, and you've got evidence on it, is the nature of the constraints that they face in terms of their current operations and land availability. And I don't think that's disputed. And so, to the extent that might tip in the favour of the requiring authority, they're unlikely to be wasting valuable and scarce land and resources in trying to establish activities that are not going to assist the airport in its operations, particularly Queenstown. I know less about Wanaka, so I can't comment on that, except to say that that was the evidence you had from Mr. Kyle this morning. The situation can potentially be contrasted with some other airports, and obviously one that you probably familiar with is Christchurch International Airport, which is a very, very significant surplus land holding, which is designated and is also subject to special purposes airport zone. And there was an issue there in terms of what an airport purposes designation provides for in terms of what might be termed non-core activities away from the terminal. And that was why the special purposes airport zone was put in. But that I suppose, embarrassment of riches in terms of operational flexibility and land is not what is facing QAC in terms of its administration of Wanaka and Queenstown. So it might be convenient then we'll just move on to my discussion about Queenstown and we can switch back if you need to.
Thank you.
So QAC gave notice to modify the aerodrome purposes designation by Gordon and Elizabeth's recent activities. Mr. Carl's explanation of that to bring it up to date and provide it for the future. And the provider on the decision of the High Court in McElroy to provide justification for the modification. And QAC submitted that the discussion in the McElroy case confirms that the activities sought to be enabled by way of the modification can properly be considered as legitimate airport and airport related activities. And I just found a caution about that reliance on McElroy because it was a Public Works Act case and the circumstances facing the High Court in that case were different from what you might be facing here in terms of what is the proper scope of the designation for airport activities. In McElroy, there was an enormous swathe of land purchased for aerodrome purposes back in the 50s. And as one who visits Auckland Airport now can see around the airport there are supermarkets, there's a theme park, there's hotels, there's a lot, it's a small city. And in light of that development of that land, the previous owners said, well, how are these activities aerodrome for aerodrome purposes? We want the court to order Auckland International to give us the land back. And in the context of a direction to offer the land back and all of the resources that have been developed from it, that was the context of the space in the court in Hackford. And it said, well, a modern airport does a whole range of different things, but we can't say with any level of precision that these are not for airport purposes. And the other thing that distinguishing factor, which is important in my submission about McElroy, is that a lot of those non-core airport activities, supermarket theme parks, were not established under a designation. They were established under special zoning or through resource consents. So Auckland International wasn't relying on its airport purposes designation for one of those activities. And that's why to say that McElroy provides you the answer about what a modern airport designation should provide for is suggesting the approach some caution because it's not necessarily really transferable across the city. The resource management sphere.
No, well, when I was reading McElroy, the lies to the point about the context that you've painted for me, and then during the airport presentation, the other issue that was exercising my mind was that as I read Ms. Walt's submissions, it was kind of a she placed a quite a significant reliance on McElroy, and we had a conversation around that, but it seemed to me that she was using McElroy in a way to prepare for submit, if you like, that all of these things were part and parcel of an airport operation, and it sort of kind of was in the category of it went without saying. There were troubles around that reliance to the extent that it seemed to be missing some level of assessment of effects. So she was saying, well, you can do all of these things under McElroy, so it follows we can do them all here. And I said, yes, that's fine, but under the Act, I've got to be thinking about the effects of these things. But we kind of went round and round for a while.
Yes, I mean, there must be a degree of operational flexibility for an airport operator. And I can't, from my perspective, draw a hard and fast line about where that sits in terms of the correct balance. I had understood that Mr. Kyle gave evidence that the bulk of the activities that being expressly permit would occur in the terminal. If that's the case, then there really can be no issue. If you're talking about standalone retail, etc., on the periphery of the airport, if that is even possible, I don't know whether it is, can you possibly get into a much greater area?
Mm.
And it is difficult to say that type of activity or a Bunnings or a Mind 10 is part of the airport purpose, and that's where the underlying issue is starting from, which you accept.
Mm.
One of the things we referred to in 6.4 of the lead submission, and I'll just tell the chief of the flipness hotly, but in terms of the objectives of the requirement authority, what was the designation of sort, is it that it's requirement authority approval?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. Yes. So, yeah, I think the objectives of the requirement by from the trial evidence are potentially narrower than simply providing pleasure from the airport related activities. And that potentially may be constraint on how that purpose, how widely drawn that purpose is. And I believe it's a cross reference to so the airport master plan. So there may be an answer in there.
Well, I did have a conversation with Mr. Carroll about the likely location on the airport where these possible developments would occur, and he based on his experience of some time with the airport, was very clear that it was around the terminal. And we brought up the point we've already discussed about landholding constraints, and the balance of the land largely is taken up with sort of aeronautical operations.
Yes. The cross reference that I've made in 6.4 is to say you possibly might have a look at it, and Mr. Kyle's evidence in chief is to paragraph 5.13 and 1.4 of his evidence where it deals with the question of reasonable necessity and refers to the objective of the required authority for this designation. And I'll just read it out now, so if you've got it in mind, so we have an interesting question. First of all, to provide for safe operation of aircraft approaching as part of the airport. Secondly, to maintain and enhance operating capacity at the airport. Third, to meet international aviation standards and CAA rules in relation to protection of flight paths. And finally, to provide the community with certainty and clarity as to the height restrictions for properties affected by obstacle limitation of services.
Yeah, so the point you're making there is the objectives have, as you referred to, are somewhat, like, or they seem to be somewhat narrower.
Potentially, and I suppose the issue is that the modifications and the nature of modifications is reasonably necessary to get the objectives. Where would they fit in terms of that list? So that's just like you said, that matter in your hands today. So the only observation I would make is that, and this again, in terms of the logic reported by Mr. Carl in the evidence he gave this morning, is it would seem illogical for the airport given us the constraints that it is facing for it to be wasting land by frivolous additional activities. that we're assisting with the operational needs of the airport. So obviously got the Lot 6 land, which is still at large. So it's obviously a real balance between getting the best out of the scarce resources and trying to maintain operational flexibility.
Just touching briefly on Lot 6, then what's your understanding if you have some information about when that's likely to be resolved?
I've been acting for the council as regulatory authority in those proceedings, so obviously been going for a long time. The latest is that the civil aviation authorities' approval of the transport safety case has occurred. The court has issued directions for RVL to raise with some Marcus Park Limited as the main opponents to raise any issues that may require hearing evidence or further determination in light of that. I think that's in late November, and the court will then consider that and decide whether it needs to reconvene a hearing and can proceed to determine the designation of the papers or the notice of requirement on what the land is about there. As to finality, I couldn't predict it. You've seen, and probably do hear evidence that has been up and down to the High Court and back to the Environment Court many times. And the stakes are obviously reasonably high for both of those key players. So I couldn't predict the outcome of any certainty, except the time of it.
Thank you.
There was a matter to do with the transitional services and the approach to land use control services, and the sort of disparity between the words and the diagrams. As I understand it, you heard plenty of evidence from the protagonists about that matter yesterday. Ms. Holden will address you on that in terms of her investigations with the CAA around its understanding of where those obstacle limitation services might head. But I suspect ultimately it will be an engagement for you as to weighing up competing views and which one is most convincing to you, and of course your community that needs to be used of the requirement for the airports and those modifications as to whether they're reasonably necessary to achieve those objectives. I suppose the short point is that Ms. Holden will be able to advise the discussion she has had with the civil aviation authority. She intends to submit or table a what's called an AIP, an airport information publication, which essentially shows the operational, the fundamental operational parameters of the airport, and that may assist you. I'm not sure from how I'm reading all the words inclusive one way or the other. And the last matter to do was closed landfills. The main point of addressing closed landfills here is that to make a submission that you probably have the ability to cancel the notice of requirement rather than requiring the council to go through and formally withdraw it based on the evidence you have in front of you. That's a bit of a reservation as to concluded that it might be a sensible thing for the requirement authority to be pursuing. I think it's an absolute requirement authority. Can't be adding anything further to that, but happy to answer any questions arising and on any matters not necessarily covered.
Thank you. And just bear with me while I rifle through my files of paper. I had arising out of the synopsis, I think I've covered those off. The cases that you attended, I found them in the main to be quite helpful. Sort of refresh my memory on key elements. One I wasn't quite sure about, sort of reasons why it was there, was the key property one. In transit, this is the environment court decision of Judge Kinderdine. It's got quite some links to it.
Yes.
And I had a skim read through, but I was really wondering, is there something that you quickly want to draw my attention to out of key property, or was it really giving me an example of how the court you know, approach the issue of a designation. Now, there were issues in that case about an earlier designation running into some difficulty and matters of that sort.
That's right. And it was really a practical application of some of the principles of the earlier Waipari case. There was nothing in particular I wanted to draw your attention, and I suppose the only thing I would say about key property management is that it's possibly a high watermark in terms of consideration of alternatives. So it is probably one end of the spectrum. But no, there was nothing specific I wanted you to take from that sphere.
Event Centre Designation 29. You've been present this morning and been talking about, you know, the issue of the child care.
I suppose from and this is only my view as counsel, representing Ms. Holden's view, from having listened to the evidence. From an ease of administration point of view, it would be quite difficult and potentially impossible to force if the destination or purpose for the parent's visit was built in as a condition of the designation. Dr. Charles could give you evidence about health issues. There seems to be no major consensus of health issues, so from a fair point of view, it would seem to be problematic to try and constrain the early childhood activity in the manner suggested by the airport. It would make the designation, from a plan administration point of view, it would make it more difficult.
No, I think that's all good. No, that'll be my top call. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Well, I'll now call on Ms. Holden to speak to her 40 day reports and present her summaries of those. I believe she's got some few minor corrections to bring to her attention in terms of 40 day reports. What's easiest in terms of where she presents from?
I'm happy just to leave her there and we can move forward from there.
Which order would you like?
I'm in your hands. I've got your reports here.
Okay, should I go with QLPC first?
So this is the general designation special here?
No, one's paying just the QLPC's requirement. I have recommended that conditions be attached to a number of reserve and utility designations to ensure an appropriate level of community is maintained. Mr. Galavazzi, who has provided evidence on behalf of the Council's requiring authority, accepts that these conditions are appropriate. I'll just point out here in my section 42 of my report, I recommended that the designation 523 to 524, they include conditions that relate to childcare facilities. Yeah, I think it's childcare facility and what kind of written street and things like that started to go on the list. I don't think it's not a reserve, and I think it's current code conditions should be applied. It's in the same brush as the council offices on Bull Street, which is the designation 527.
So can you just take me to the appropriate reference in your report, please?
Okay.
So that should be removed, if that's what you're saying now?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, no, sorry. Number of matching errors and inconsistencies with the new designations
Mrs. Galavati and Erin Morgan, and she, they have provided evidence on behalf of council's requiring authority and agree that these amendments should be made. By way of submission, the council has requested the shape of these suggestions, 376, for the Wanaka Sports System, Sports and Events Facility DMN Litigation, as confirmed by Legal Committee RA 140723. That submission plate was not addressed in my section 42A report, but I can confirm that the area of the land covered by designation 376 in the proposed district plan does not align with that confirmed by RA 140023, and I recommend that this area be corrected as well.
Is the extent of the area in terms of sort of land size, is it significant or is it just a
the alignment of the designation value, but that actually across two parcels of land, that the alignment doesn't, and the planning map and the proposed district plan doesn't match the notice of requirement confirmed by the
and what's the actual planning map reference number?
That was 18A.
You think it's 18A?
Yeah. I note that the council no longer has confirmed designation for the closed landfill, which is being advertised, 4394394028, and the stormwater storage basin gets to the Maka Park at 4893. Based on submissions and evidence filed prior to the hearing, outstanding issues relate to the designation of community airstrip, the Queenstown Events and Aquatic Centre, and also the offices. Just a note that I picked up today in our conversation. There was a condition on within the designation of the operative district plan relating to the event sector, designation 29. It was condition 15 of the operative district plan that restricted the use of current zones remaining on site and the use of the vacant sector. I addressed that at paragraph 7.44 of my section 42 report. Designation was rolled over from the operative district and with modification. Evidence has been filed by the Council, Queenstown Airport Corporation and the New Zealand Transport Agency in relation to the fifth designation, addressing issues associated with Spanish, Nordic and Afghan. Taking this evidence into consideration, I've revised my view on a number of matters in recent commission. Firstly, I consider that it is not necessary for the site at the entrance to the event centre to be restricted in terms of what usages it displays, given the type of usage would not impede traffic safety. Mrs. Galavati has proposed an amended advice note in relation to notifying NZTA when the heat source site may generate significant traffic. I accept this proposed wording if it's appropriate. I accept the evidence provided by Dr. Stephen Charles for the Council of Requiring Authority in relation to removing conditions 4 and 7 and replacing these with a new condition capturing the intention of both conditions. In my view, Dr. Charles' proposed condition also achieves the intent of the condition proposed by Mr. John Kyle in his evidence QAC. I accept Dr. Charles' evidence that provided the buildings are designed to provide an internal sound level of 40 decibels RPM it is appropriate for daycare activities to be carried out at the Queenstown Event Centre site, whether parents or guardians are using the event centre for its designated purpose or not. In terms of designation 175 relating to the Highway Recreation Reserve Motor Park at Lake Harbour, submitted to Lake Sierra Burden have requested that this designation be extended to cover the entire parcel of land legally described as Constitution 2 Block 2, Lower Harbour, to their district headquarters. Ms. Galavagi has now confirmed that the council wishes to extend the designation as sought by Ms. Burden, provide the requiring authorities to undertake necessary management or upstream works in accordance with the purpose of this designation. On this basis, I agree that the extension is appropriate. Turning to designation 239, which is the recreation of the aerodrome, so that's what it was notified. The airstrip at Penalty outside of Penalty Township. The purpose of this designation is to enable the takeoff and landing of the aircraft. The designation was rolled over from the OUC without modification. Wairua Preserve is rural lifestyle residential development located in close proximity to the airstrip. Yesterday I noted that there was some discussion on when that subdivision consent was of the rezoning and then it was granted, so this morning I quickly found out for you. The rezoning was provided by an environmental decision, what that was in number, but then the subsequent subdivision was granted on the 27th of February 2007.
And what's the environmental court reference number?
C10. Submitted 744, being the Wairua Preserve Residents Association Incorporated, submitted that conditions should be placed on the designation to address the unrestricted use of the airstrip by private and commercial aircraft. The council has subsequently volunteered three conditions to be imposed on the designation, restricting the hours of operation and requiring aircraft operators to stay in routes and operate the aircraft in accordance with the flight labour guidelines. I recommend that these conditions volunteers by the council be included in the designation. However, I'm still of the opinion that if there is not sufficient baseline information regarding the current nature and scale of commercial activities utilising the airstrip. For example, the number of flights, the existing number of leases and licenses, noise risk speed at the locational boundaries of residential units and flight paths. So we don't know enough about this in order to impose further conditions relating to this event, in my opinion. Further, I do not consider that imposing conditions within the designation is the appropriate mechanism for managing the effects associated with flight paths or the number of leases or licenses. However, I do consider that some parameters should be placed around commercial operations to appropriately manage the adverse effects resulting from the use of land for its designation purpose. Evidence has been filed by Dr. Charles from Council as requiring authority and from Mr. Malcolm Hunt on behalf of Wairua. Both have advised that because of the character of the commercial skydiving flights operating from the North East Strip and that of the paraglide takeoff and that the aircraft staying in the general area after takeoff, flying to an altitude and immediately descend to land, there is an absence of a standardized method or objective parameter to comprehensively quantify noise effects from the general airstrip. Dr. Charles has suggested that an appropriate response could be controlling the number of movements, flight paths, and hours of operation. Mr. Hunt has recommended the development of a noise management plan which sets out approved flight track, level of aircraft activity, and hours of operation. Given the character of aircraft operations from for the Glenorchy airstrip. I consider that the developer of a emergency management plan could be an acceptable resource management approach to the managing the effects of the Glenorchy airstrip. Skydive Queenstown Limited submitted that the purpose of the designation should be corrected and that the designation should be extended to cover the whole site rather than just the airstrip. I recommend that the purpose of the designation be corrected to Local Purpose Reserve Airport to align with its classification under the Reserve Act. In terms of the extension of the designation over the whole site, evidence was provided by Ms. Vicky Jones and Mr. Peter Bartley on behalf of Skydive Queenstown. Taking into consideration this evidence, my view remains that the Council has not asked for all of the sites to be designated, and there is no evidence to support the contention that designating the entire site is necessary for the safe and efficient functioning or operation of public work by the requirement authority, which is the nature of responsibility for this work. Designation 526-528 and 529 in relation to the offices down the Bulls Road. I accept the evidence provided by Mr. Salamardi in that it is inappropriate to impose conditions on this designation. The effects of a future development would be assessed by the outline plan. And so that's the same for the designation 528-524.
Okay, thank you. Just before we move on then, some queries and questions.
Mm-hmm.
Can we pick up your recommendation around the noise management plan for the Glenorchy Aerodrome? Now, have you given thought to appropriate wording of a condition that might attach to the designation? You express your view that the development of a noise management plan could be an acceptable resource management approach.
Mm.
So, is a recommendation, your recommendation, that a noise management plan, or the need to develop one, be included as a condition of the designation or not?
Basically the issue is a massive issue that we don't know what the nature and scale of the activity is.
Mm-hmm.
Even determining, we can't impose a noise limit, we don't even know what the current noise associated with the activity is.
Right.
So I think a noise management plan, a condition requiring one to be produced could address those matters. It could require some measurements. It could, as part of developing that, it could impose a limit. It could would identify the current number of users. I think all this baseline information that we're currently lacking could be addressed through this noise management plan. But I think the condition would have to be worded such that the objectives that you want to achieve through that noise management plan were clear.
And have you given thought to an appropriate wording for such a condition?
No, I haven't actually. But I know Mr. Ferguson has even provided wording.
Mm-hmm.
I need to reread it.
And have you given any thought to the issue of time and to when a noise management plan would need to be completed by?
It would have to be, I would say, within 6 months.
Within 6 months of what?
Of confirmation of the information.
So the requiring authority would have to undertake the necessary works to come up with a noise management plan, or that would commence. How are you going to see it working?
So the noise management plan would help establish the baseline.
Yes, I understand that.
but in effect Malcolm Mr. Mountain Hunt was proceeding to see that there needs to be another condition that was linked back to it, that the commercial operator would have to
comply with the noise and
I agree with that. What was your question?
Well, first question was timing, and you've covered that. You said that I think you're saying noise management plan would need to be commenced or completed within 6 months. They wish to pursue.
It would have to be provided to the territorial authority arm of council.
Within 6 months. So noise management plan completed within 6 months.
Yes. Yeah. There was evidence provided that there was a difference between say summer and winter activity. So actually if I think about that, if it's better, say you have to assess it in both seasons, therefore you have to allow a chance for that maybe a year.
Because
it might differ.
All right. Well, do you think with a little more time you would be able to turn your mind to developing an appropriate condition?
Yes.
If that's your recommendation to include a condition. So we need to address the issue of where the obligation to complete the noise. Who it rests on, it's obviously the requiring authority. The timing by which the plan is to be completed, and the connection between the monitoring that you're talking about and the plan itself, and then there's the issue of the expectation that the plan is going to be complied with by all operators. Now, just teasing the point out but a little further, you've heard the evidence from many other council officers about their preference is to use the reserve management plan and licences or leases, licences under that. You're not comfortable with that approach, given what you're telling me here.
Yeah, I think the two can be linked in some way. I don't think that the management plan should pick out the number of leases and licenses, because that is managed via a different piece of legislation anyway. But I think by producing that noise management plan, we have some correct, we've established some parameters around acceptable number of lights, or how many, what the noise limit should be, or currently is. That's what it currently is. And then how many aircraft movements it would take to reach that limit. And then that can inform the number of reasons and licenses that are issued under different legislative approach.
Through the report. A lot's occurred since you've written the report, I'll see if I've got any remaining points for you. if I just take you to your paragraph 770, so the point we're just discussing about the irregularity. At the bottom of page 34. Now, in that paragraph, and I've mentioned that, you were pretty definitive back then about the issue, concluding there. Furthermore, I don't consider imposing conditions for the designation of the appropriate mechanism for managing effects associated with flight class and annual number of leases and licenses. Yet your thinking now has changed, it's moved on from that second point.
Yeah.
What was it that sort of made you think differently?
I do still think that it is what I'm saying. I'm saying the noise management plan is not, I don't need it to address flight paths or the number of leases.
That can be
helpful.
Yeah.
But I was thinking in terms of flight paths, I was thinking it's not really a mechanism for can control the decision making. That was my thinking.
Right.
We've got the volunteer commission about the fly neighbourly guidelines. I think it's working at communicating and working with the commercial operators who let them know, they know it, but they're aware of the issues, but communicating with them, trying to get a good solution for the community, but I don't think that's part of the designation commission.
So the noise management plan then, it's going to be, so I take it from what you're saying, your thinking is it's going to be restricted to takeoffs and landings using the runway strip.
Well, that's the purpose of the designation.
I understand that.
But the noise management
plan. Now, the issue that the residents group have raised is the microlight activity above the proposed or existing settlement.
Yeah.
And they're saying, well, that's creating an annoyance or a level of noise that's unacceptable. So how does the noise management plan approach seek to address that issue if there is an issue there?
Well, for a start, that was through the getting the baseline information, recording data, that would provide evidence that there was an issue or not.
Yeah, but that's going to be measuring noise outputs for the aircraft after they've left the aerodrome.
Mm. I suppose though by having the airstrip here in that designation, we're facilitating that activity to occur, to go up and down in the way that they do. So. Yes, well, I think it does need to be conditioned through whatever mechanism, I think. But I'm just grappling with where that's at this point.
Yeah. Because what you seem to be saying, as I understand it, is that the designation is, if you like, relatively restrictive.
Mm.
But the issue we're concerned with is the noise of the aircraft while they're flying after they have left the designated area per se.
Yeah.
I haven't understood the evidence to be that residents are concerned with aircraft engines driven out there, on the designated area.
Yeah.
So if we're looking at a noise management plan, and you're telling me, I think, that we should be focusing on noise management plan and designation, how does that get us into the issue of concern for the residents group?
So,
determining where the aircraft goes, some other witnesses are suggesting the best place for that is in the license.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
Right.
That is what I think. That specific perimeter is
the
best included in the license.
So you get a license to operate down the aerodrome, provided that you stick to the following flight path.
Yeah. Exactly. But that then that links back to the noise measurement and sensors.
Well, how does that link? That's the bit that I'm missing at the moment.
Because we need that baseline information, and the noise management plan will be a requirement to assess that information and get the current number of, to assess the current scale and nature of the operation. So that's how it is. Because there's no requirement to do that otherwise, apart from the reserve management plan.
Well, I'm just, my concern is about, you know, the scope that I've got to include the noise management plan for purposes beyond taking off and landing at the aerodrome.
Yeah.
You know, do you see the issue that I'm raising for you? You know, do you think it's appropriate that, you know, if I start talking about a noise management plan, can I be talking about a noise management plan that deals with more than just landing and taking off from the aerodrome?
Yeah, okay. So when I get the evidence provided from Mr. Malcolm Hudson in Thurston, the way I interpreted it was it would be a useful mechanism to ensure that that baseline is the information on the matching scale of the activity to establish. That's how I would think.
I agree with you. I think that's right. You know, I accept that.
That has fired that perception in terms of my summary, but thinking about it further, I see where you're coming from.
Because I'm thinking that the designation is, can I use the phrase, relatively restrictive.
Yeah.
And if I'm thinking about a noise management plan that deals with more than planes landing and taking off from the destination, but it seeks to do other things,
yeah.
Am I going too far?
Yeah. It's in terms of the designation, yes.
Yeah.
But I think that's when I go back to the statement I made in my 43 report, and I do think perhaps the licenses are a better place to manage the effects wider than
But I understood from the officers that when they were thinking about licenses and their numbers and matters of that sort, they did acknowledge that there would be a need to gather information on noise data, and that would inform how many licenses they issued and matters of that sort.
I think it has to. It's not a way to do it.
Yeah, I think it's a question. Okay. All right, now that's good, thank you. That's QLVC designation. So which one would you like to go to next?
Also from the airports, please.
Okay, on the airports, please.
Designations 2 and 4 relate to the operation of Queensland Airport. The requiring authority is Queensland Airport Corporation. Designations 64 and 65 relate to the operation of Warnock Airport. The requiring authority is Queensland District Council. However, QAP key manages the airport, but does not have a financial responsibility. These designations were rolled over with modification from the overseas and PDP. In terms of designation 2, the Environment Court confirmed designation 2 as part of managing DD5 proceedings. DD5 relates to the management and mitigation of aircraft noise, and with the notice of requirement for designation 2 being lodged concurrently with DD5. As we've discussed today, there are still unresolved appeals before the Environment Court relating to DD5. However, the modifications to designation 2 are not an issue. As such, the PC-75 version of the designation was included in the PC. The following modifications to the designation were included: an expanded list of permitted activities to include retail activities, restaurants and other food and beverage facilities, signage, industrial and commercial activities, provided they are connected with and ancillary to the use of the airport. Removal of details which no longer still required, changes to the conditions relating to building height, went from 9 metres to 15 metres, setbacks, which went from 10 metres through 5 metres or 3 metres, in relation to all areas of the designation, and removal of a condition prohibiting non-airport related activities, and inclusion of additional units owned by Stewart. Having reviewed the evidence provided by Mr. John Kyle on behalf of QAC, I consider that it would be appropriate to clarify that all activities identified in subparagraph A to the F of Condition 1 are permitted, provided they are ancillary to the use of the airport. Remarkable Park Limited RPL opposes a number of the proposed modifications. These include amending the conditions to increase the maximum building height, extending the range of activities that can be undertaken under the designation, reducing setbacks, and removing a condition that prohibits all non-airport related activities. In my Section 42A report, I recommend that the submission of RPL be rejected on both accounts, and that QAC's proposed modifications to the designation be confirmed with minor amendments or substitutes. However, on reflection, I note that the notice of requirement does not assess whether it is appropriate to provide for retail activities, food and other beverage facilities, or industrial and commercial activities by way of the designation. Based on the legal submissions of RPL, I consider that QAC should provide further information to justify the inclusion of retail and food and beverage and other commercial activities in the designation, and to demonstrate that limits on the national scale of such activities are not necessary. Designation 4 provides the takeoff and approach surfaces and conditional surfaces in relation to runways at the airport by setting heightened obstacle clearance restrictions to safeguard the efficient functioning of the operation and to protect people's spaces. In the operative district plan, designation 4 refers to a 75 metre strip to be applied to the purpose of setting the location of takeoff, climb and approach surfaces. QAC seeks to modify designation 4 by replacing the reference to 75 metres with the reference to 150 metres. I note that this modification was not underlined in the notice of requirements. QAC's position is that there is a contradiction in the ODP between the text within condition C3, describing where the takeoff climb and approach surface originates, and figure 1 being Queensland Airport approach and protection measures. The conditions of the ODP make no reference to the width of the transitional surfaces. QAC's further text include reference to the width of the transitional surfaces being 150 metres, which QAC's notice of requirement states is consistent with Figure 1. RPL opposes with modifications to the text proposed by QAC and submits that there is no evidence or analysis to support that it is the text rather than the figure that is incorrect. As noted in the Section 42A report, I do not have the expertise to discuss whether the amendments to the designation conditions correctly reflect the diagram. I note that QAC has not yet demonstrated that Figure 1 is correct. I consider that it would be useful for QAC to provide information which confirms this. I did bring the Civil Aviation Authority, and they referred me to the Aeronautical Information Publication of New Zealand, which has available on their website all the charts for all aerodromes in New Zealand. So I clicked on the one for Queenstown, and the gentleman on the phone that I was speaking to, he said that this is my evidence to show that it's 150 metres each side of the runway. although these 150 metres mounted on this plane, I can't see, it doesn't really make clear what it refers to. The person I spoke to confirmed that that is what it actually shows, but I can't see.
When I was having a conversation with QAT about this point. I think the high point of that conversation was from Ms. Wells, and she said, well, operationally, the airport use 150. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of your kind of recollection of that's the highest quality information we received about which number is correct?
Yes. So I wasn't based on listening to what needs to say yesterday. What I interpreted is there was nothing in concrete evidence that confirmed either way, but after speaking to the Civil Aviation Authority, they told me the best people to talk to would be the airport, which had that information. And then refer me to that chart. So I'm assuming that they have to, or they do, they have to abide by the Civil Aviation Authority requirements. So I assume that they would be supposed to know.
All right, okay, now that's clear enough. Well, your position on that, clear enough, you can say that.
So, I'll turn that to Monica.
Mm-hmm.
Designation 64. Purpose of this designation is to protect the operational capability of Monica Airport while at the same time minimising adverse environmental effects from aircraft noise. The Council's requiring authority proposes a number of modifications to the designation, including an extended list of permitted activities. Evidence has been provided by Mr. John Powell in relation to Wanaka Airport. I agree with the conclusions reached by Mr. Powell in relation to modern and sophisticated aerodromes now demanding a diverse mix of commercial, industrial, retail, land uses that serve the needs of passengers, crews, ground staff, airport workers, and those that meet and greet travellers. However, I do not change my view that the nature and scale of permitted activities listed within the notice of requirements to be designation 64 is too broad. In terms of designation 65, this provides for the takeoff climb and approach services and transitional services in relation to the runways at Wanaka Airport. I have recommended that this designation be confirmed as modified subject to minor amendments to by QSA.
All right. Picking up the point about your paragraph 16, your concern that the nature and scale of permitted activities are being too broad.
Mm.
Now, Mr. Kyle and also had a conversation with Mr. Winchester this morning about some of the characteristics of both Wanaka Airport and Queenstown Airport, particularly in terms of the constraints around land supply.
Mm-hmm.
Have you taken that point into account when you've arrived at your conclusion that the nature and scale of permitted activities are being too broad?
Yes, I agree that that's a valid piece of evidence that the airport operations are constrained on both accounts. climate and sustainable issues. However, one of the issues that wanted the airport is that airport-related activities or non-airport-related activities are overtaking infrastructure and resources that should be directly associated with the airport activities, such as hangars. Just apparently, according to the submissions we received, that's a constrained resource that people compete for. It needs to hang in. And then, although this was commissioned by a resource consent, there is a wholesale outlet retail store operating out of a hangar at Wanaka Airport. And I think there is a concern that these either airport related activities or by the resource consent process, non related activities are established at one of the airports where they're using a resource that should be used for airport activities.
But if these activities that are using airport resource like hangars have gone through a consenting process, isn't that an answer in itself?
Just don't want to see a proliferation of these being established under the designation.
But they're not established under the designation, though, are they?
Well, just one example is not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thinking about in the future because of the designation. But also, the nature and scale of the activity at Wanaka Airport is just vastly different to that at Queenstown. And my concern was that there's not parameters set around what airport related activities actually are. So I think I agree that it's fine to provide for staff and passengers and for a small amount of retail, a small amount of services, which I have no problem with that. I was just thinking in terms of if we commit this and allow this, what could be established?
So would it be your preference then that to at least in part answer some of the issues that Mr. Kyle's raised about the needs of a modern airport to provide this diverse mix of commercial, industrial and retail uses, would you prefer to see some limits in terms of floor areas and matters of that sort?
Yeah.
Alright. So if we say that out, if we put limits in, how would we go about determining what an appropriate limit was?
We'd have to, I suppose, get evidence on what from somebody from the expert to determine that. I mean, I couldn't do that, I don't think.
But the issue probably more so though, what I'm thinking about is the requiring authority wants to provide for the development of its assets over the life of the plan. It doesn't quite, you know, completely foresee, it hasn't got a crystal ball that's sort of saying, well, definitely in year three we'll need this and year five we'll need that. It wants a degree of flexibility. So looking at that flexibility and looking at your concern about unconstrained growth, because that's what your issue seems to be,
right?
Mr. Kyle responds to that in two ways. He says, well, look, we've got a finite land supply. Our core activity is to provide sufficient operational space for our core activity, planes coming and going. So we're not going to jeopardize that by putting a retail activity to take up that available space. The other point he makes is that these activities have always got to be ancillary to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking, given these controls, they come out of context, land supply, they come out of conditions of the designation, ancillary to. Are you not satisfied that that provides sufficient?
How are the ancillary to measures? I do think.
Well, you are the planner here.
Well, no, that's my concern because at the moment the way it's been noticed,
How would you normally go about determining whether an activity is ancillary or not?
Well, I actually thought about it when he spoke about the mini budget does make a lot more sense.
Right.
But the assessment will just put into the notice of requirements with what I'm forming my opinion on. So, we're talking about grant time, but this grant would apply to Monica.
Yes.
It's actually the terminal building that is thinking of expanding. So, if I suppose if the activity was, if a retail activity or a food and beverage facility was contained within the terminal building, that would be clearly ancillary. But if it was a standalone restaurant or supermarket or something, to me, that would be clearly not.
Right. And if we had the condition in the designation that it had to be ancillary, then the restaurant that was standalone wouldn't be covered by the designation, would it?
No, probably. It depends on interpretation. That I'm only raising caution. I think that the other point I was thinking of, the conversation was, given the nature, so there's no longer passenger movements in and out of Wanaka Airport.
On scheduled flights,
but there used to be.
Yes.
But could the airport, I was just thinking how to say this thing, could the airport not argue that this is, that the establishment of a retail store, for example, at the airport, was necessary to provide for the ongoing operation of the airport, given the lack of economic, economic return from the primary core operation of the airport, they needed these other activities to subsidise that.
So you're saying that the lack of passengers would be offset by trying to attract people using retail stores?
Possibly.
Right.
Or I just wouldn't want, I just would be cautious, I would not want that to. But, because the designation is quite permissive.
Yes, yes.
So, I was just trying to think, what are the consequences for the scenario if we made this permissive spot zoning over the site, what could occur? And I don't think there were parameters placed around any of the standards of the committee activity.
That's for Wanaka.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wanaka. Well, you know, Mr. The point's been made, isn't it, that a designation is a powerful tool, as Mr. Woods just pointed out.
Yes.
In relation to Queenstown Airport then, given what Mr. Carl said about that the likely location of these extensions being not necessarily in the terminal but around the terminal, because the terminal would expand in size, do you have best reservation about the same issue in the context of the Queenstown Airport?
All through the discussion yesterday, I kept thinking about what I said about Wanaka and the lack of an assessment of a depth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the extended list of permitted activities would apply as well to Queenstown, and that lack of an assessment.
So what you're looking for then is far greater particularity about what's proposed, so that something akin to a resource consent, possession of effects, could be undertaken. Is that really what you're looking for?
Well, for me, this is my interpretation. So I would have thought, so when I was a consent processor and I just processed out my case, I would have thought that the assessment of allowing that designation purpose of that designation to be located there. I would have thought that that assessment of effects would have occurred at that time, and therefore me checking the outline status to make sure it's in accordance with the designation.
Yeah.
And not and the conditions, and not actually focused on the actual effects itself, because I would have thought that would have been done at the time of the notice of requirement was lodged.
Yeah, unless it's done at that time, the horse is bolted, in other words.
Yeah. So, I think that the assessment of it standing in both cases, once the understanding is done, I think assessing that it's standard list of permitted activities needs to be undertaken in order to, you know, determine some of these inadvertent effects that might have and the confidential effects.
Right, so that's airports. I'll just have a quick look through and see if I've got any other follow-up queries for you. And we haven't, you haven't commented on the update, as it were, on the freight facility issue at One Kiwi Airport.
Mm-hmm.
What's your view there?
I just didn't think that was defined or there was any criminal about it.
So you're saying pretty much where you were when you wrote your original report.
Mm-hmm.
You recorded there, I consider the potential effect of listing freight facilities as a permitted activity needs to be more carefully assessed.
Yeah.
Alright, no, thank you. I have no further questions on airports.
Okay.
Now, there's one left, isn't there, general designation?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we might box on if that's okay and get that completed. Mr. Winchester, are you thinking of making any further comments before we conclude?
Unless you have comments, you have a question for writing.
No, I don't. So we'll just carry on and finish off general designation.
Authorities of designation and operative plan were invited to give written notice to Council for rollover their designation. Council received written notice from all requiring authorities confirming the designations they wish to be rolled over. Several modifications were requested by requiring authorities and were incorporated into the proposed district plan as notified. Additional minor amendments were sought through submission. I considered most of these changes to be appropriate as detailed in my Section 42A report. Aurora Energy sought to roll over three existing designations from the ODT to the PDP. It also sought to include five designations which could not yet be included in the ODT, as well as seven new requirements over 6 existing electricity substations in one regulation. Two of these new leak requirements were incorrectly met in the proposed district plan, being designation 567 at Jack's Point and designation 574 at Bowfield. Now, section 42A report recommends that these missing areas be rectified and no routine stations be inspected.
Now, for this part of your report, I'm comfortable where there is no sort of further change, so to take that as read.
Okay.
So, unless there's anything that you want to draw to my attention about that, I'm alive to the Minister of Education, the New Zealand Police, NZCA, Transpower, I wasn't quite sure there about condition H.
Okay. Do you want me to put
questions
in about the next service one that we discussed?
All right, yes, please.
I've got confirmation from both the next service and GRU's people stating that that designation identified on the plan is 576, isn't it? Yeah, 576. That is actually the location of the designation.
Yeah, and I think yesterday Mr. Carl told me that 230 comes off.
Yeah.
And 576, that number comes off, and that becomes 230.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I've got confirmation there.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, so change power. In my 42A report, I recommended that the submission from council being submitted 383 in relation to the leaking condition H and change type power designation number 1. The expected. I stated that in the submission, it was stated that condition H may longer be relevant in the context of the limitations imposed by the National Policy Statement on Electricity Transmission. However, following discussions with Transpower, I note that the NTS does not apply to third parties operating in the power line, therefore condition H should retain. So in the revised chapter, they were still in this condition, but I suggested that they be relabeled because the heading related to legal description of sites that were inaccurate prevent getting up change. So I just needed that the heading be changed, but that the conditions remain.
Yes, that's appended to your...
So I got the GA's team to mock up what this would look like, NZCA designation, running to, for instance, if the debt prison is just the state highway shift, is white, doesn't have that designation.
Oh, I see. So this has got the designated sort of spotted blue dots?
Yeah, so that's what it would look like.
Thank you. that's all good. Now, except to the report, the mapped up version of the, you know, the designation chapter, Appendix 1, the vice chapter, and that represents, well, the position including your recommendations at the time when you wrote the 42A report. Okay. Now, to help me keep track of the additional and further changes that have been made, how is that supposed to be dealt with?
I can do that for you.
That's the answer I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to volunteer that actually. Mm-hmm. I'll make a suggestion. So timing wise, it's not at the same time as people's last reply.
Well,
not again, Christmas through any parties or anything.
No, I'm you know, relatively relaxed about it. As I said, the replies we've got are just from requiring authorities, and so far the airport are signalling interest in doing that, and they'll no doubt be interested in reading your final summation today, and no doubt responding to that. If it could be done in a way where the parties who want to exercise the right to reply have got it so they can access it, that would be useful, but how would you look at that?
I am going to be in the North Island until Wednesday,
and
that
Thursday.
So it wouldn't
take
me long though.
No, there aren't a great number.
No.
And those being marked up in somehow in a way that can be easily identified that those changes since the 42A report. They've been marked up in a way that people reading the revised chapter could see.
Yeah.
All right. So when then do you think it would be available on the website?
I could do it by before Friday next week.
Before Friday next week.
Possibly
earlier, but maybe. Alright, so if we were going to adjourn, we're adjourning today then, and then I'm pretty sure that procedural minute about replies discussed 5 working days. So that'll start from Tuesday, won't it? So day 1 will be Tuesday. So, yeah, they'll have a limited opportunity, but there aren't a great deal of changes that you're.
If I
had to,
I could probably get it before
you,
but
yeah.
I could even
finish it
really
fast. Well, we'll be finishing pretty shortly.
We'll make it
down to that. Alright, okay. Well, look, if we can work on that basis, that you'll do it as soon as you practically can. The intention is that it's available for parliament who want to exercise rights for Friday, have a look at it. Right? And it'll be loaded to the website in the usual kind of way.
Yep, right.
And would some appropriate signal be able to be given arising out of this hearing that, you know, it's there for parties to look at if they wish to, those exercising rights for reply. So they need to know that we've done that, so if they want to go and have a look at what it looks like. Alright, okay. Any other points like that arising you can think of?
Thank you.
Right, well, last action step then is to, well, two steps. Firstly, to thank everybody who's assisted me throughout this week, particularly Morgan and Rebecca. Your help's been much appreciated. And to all other parties who have presented, most who have now gone, I thank them for their efforts and their considered thought that's gone into their submissions. So I'll adjourn now, and I'm simply going to adjourn the hearing, and rights of reply and matters of that sort are in hand in terms of the procedural minute directing timelines for those. So once again, thanks very much, and we'll adjourn this hearings on designations at this point. Thank you.
Thank you.